Bright Nights Community Forum, Self-Compassion as a Resilience Factor in Mental Health, with Rix Warren, Kate Baker, Paulette Grotrian, and Mika Handelman.
So how about if my panelists introduce yourselves to the audience? Kate, you want to go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I'm Kate Baker. I'm a psychiatrist at the University of Michigan. I primarily treat physicians in training, so medical students and house officers. So I got interested in self-compassion through a workshop with Kristen Neff, who's spent her career studying this. And initially, we were doing the experiences and the practices, and I was in a room full of therapists, and I felt really out of place. But at some point during the day, something clicked. And I really felt the power of this sort of intervention and practice. And so I really use it frequently in my clinical work because I work with a really highly self-critical population, and find it to be very, very helpful, both in terms of my own self-practice and in my clinical work. So.
Hi, I'm Mika Handelman. I'm a postdoctoral fellow at University of Michigan Psychological Clinic. I also have, a personal and professional interest in the material. Going through my PhD program, had pretty high levels of self-criticism and began reading The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown, which then led to introduction to Kristen Neff, which then led into mindful self-compassion and then compassion-focused therapy with Gilbert. And so seeing how much it's been beneficial for me and clients that I've worked with, I've started developing a group that's kind of weaving together some components of self-compassion therapy.
Yeah. Kristen Neff, I brought a Kristen Neff book or two, and Chris Germer and Elisha Goldstein. Yeah, so I'm Paulette Grotrian. I'm a mindfulness-based stress reduction teacher and mindful self-compassion teacher. I had the good fortune of studying and doing my teacher training with Kristen Neff and Christopher Germer, who developed the program at the University of California, San Diego Medical School. So Kristen Neff is the lead researcher in the world on self-compassion. It's pretty phenomenal. Like you were saying, all the research, that's coming to light right now on how self-compassion can help us function more fully and honestly be happier. I'm also faculty emeritus at Washtenaw Community College in communication. So I will just say that the self-compassion piece has made a huge difference in my life. I know that I have suffered from overachieving and perfectionism most of my life. And so these tools have been a huge help for me personally, just in terms of being happier.
Okay, so thank the four of you who have questions on these cards. If you think of questions that come up while we're answering these questions, then you can just call it out, I guess. Oh yeah, that's another thing you can do. All right, so the first question is, explain how ACT, or ACT, which is a form of therapy, stands for acceptance and commitment therapy, for those of you who are therapists or maybe have therapists. Explain how ACT and compassion-focused therapy differ and are similar. So that sounds like a question that somebody that knows about these approaches is curious about. So anybody in the panel want to talk about that?
I purchased the book on that, but I've only read like 5 pages. There's the ACT Practitioner's Guide to CFT.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know.
Anybody else want to comment on it? Well, I will. Acceptance and commitment therapy is considered like the third wave of cognitive behavior therapy, and it's focused on mindfulness of our emotions, our internal experiences, and acceptance of those emotions while we commit ourselves to engaging in valued actions, doing the things that are important to us without having to abolish whatever negative emotion there. So it's really focused on mindfulness and acceptance. And there's a lot of techniques that go along with that that help people do those things. Compassion-focused therapy is similar in the sense that both of these approaches foster helping a person become more compassionate. But I think the techniques with compassion-focused therapy, in my mind, are a little bit more like traditional cognitive behavior therapy, where you would analyze more sort of the reasoning of the whether certain thoughts are true or not. What's the evidence for it? So with compassion-focused therapy, if I'm telling myself that I'm inferior because I can't do something as well as somebody else, the focus might be on, first of all, seeing, like, what function does that thought serve? Does that protect me in somehow to criticize myself? And then we might go on to look at, is that really true? You know, am I really inferior because I can't do something as well as somebody else? Whereas the ACT therapy would be more observing the thought. They might have you say, I'm having the thought that I'm inferior. So you step back and try to get distance between the thought, but you don't challenge the content of the thought. So that's a very brief attempt to define or compare and contrast those two types of therapy. Okay. All right, the next one, what's the first step that you could recommend to someone that needed to learn self-compassion? Anybody want to take that one on? What's the first step you would recommend to someone that wants to learn self-compassion?
I would say there's a great website. It's Kristen Neff's website, selfcompassion.org. If you just type in self-compassion, it's the first hit that comes up on Google. But she does a great overview of what it is, the evidence behind it, and there's also guided meditations in there that you can access and begin the practice. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a really nice one-stop shop way to just broadly familiarize yourself and begin the practice. For me, anyway, that's been most helpful.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to add to that?
Yeah, I would say have a teacher. And Kristen Neff and Christopher Germer also have a website called Center for MSC, and that website has all of the guided meditations by them that are in the Mindful Self-Compassion course. Also, if you have access on your phone or on a computer to Insight Timer, InsightTimer.com. You can search for self-compassion practices. And if you like the self-compassion break that we just did, if you email me, I'll email it to you. I have it recorded. So, yeah. I think there's some wonderful online resources. Kristen Neff and Christopher Germer are actually putting the Mindful Self-Compassion class online now. So a lot of good resources online and a lot of good resources locally, face-to-face.
You said this is Center for NFC?
Center4MSC.org.
That's the Mindful Self-Compassion.
Yeah, has all the guided practices on there. And
I think they also have a listing of there are 8-week classes that you can take, and so there's a listing of those classes and where they're offered, and then there's also retreats throughout the country at various, actually throughout the world. So if you're interested in going on a retreat, that's another place you could register for that as well.
They're going global.
Yeah, they're all in pretty cool locations, so.
If you do go to the Self-Compassion website, you could click on a TED Talk that Krista Neff does on self-compassion, which is a good way to kind of hear her talk about it. Yeah. Also, her book is advertised on there, too. It's called Self-Compassion, Stop Beating Yourself Up and Leave Insecurity Behind, which is really a great book and be a good introduction to it as well.
So is Christopher Germer's book, The Mindful Path to Self-Compassion, Freeing Yourself from Destructive Thoughts and Emotions. So his book is good, too.
Okay, the next question is, what's the best book to start with?
Bam!
The one we just said.
I also brought Elisha Goldstein's book. He just wrote a book uncovering happiness, overcoming depression with mindfulness and self-compassion. And he's really good. And he's got a website. And he offers online courses too. So these are my three people.
All right. Very good. Okay, let's see. Tolerance, empathy, understanding, mindfulness, forgiveness seem to come even more easily to myself as I age. Makes life a joy and not a task. Any feedback to keep it going, especially as we age with physical pain?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I'm so young, I don't think I can really address that. So, any of you want to talk about that?
As a senior ranking member on the panel. Yeah, so mindfulness-based stress reduction was developed by Jon Kabat-Zinn primarily for people with pain, chronic pain. And then they found it was really helpful to everyone. And that's really the beauty of these practices. They're helpful to everybody. So yeah, there's, you know, there's a lot to accept about getting older. Things change, and so it is a gift to have the tools to be able to be compassionate with ourselves.
I think that's really true. You know, as we get more into older age, there's going to be more more suffering. There's going to be more physical problems. There may be chronic pain that's still there. There's loss and so forth. So.
Yeah.
A lot of great opportunities as we get older to practice self-compassion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
You know, I might just add to that, though. There's also some wisdom that comes with aging and maybe some kind of makes more sense that this kind of a practice might be a way of taking care of myself. We might allow it a little more as we age. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
things we get a little wiser.
Okay, so our next one is, are any of the articles that were in the slideshow available online? And I got them all from online. It just depends on what you have access to with your computer or what kind of institution. If you wanted to email me, my email address, if you want to take it down, is ricksw@umich.edu. And if you are interested in me sending you the articles that you saw or any of them, and you remember what they are, you could email me. You could even say, send me your PowerPoint. I'd be happy to just send that out to the world there to you guys. Okay. What are some websites and references on the topic? Just heard that.
One other thing I just want to mention about finding articles. Does everybody know about Google Scholar? If you get into Google, there's a sort of a button that you can specifically pick that opens up academic articles and publications. It doesn't give you access to everything, I don't think, but it does give you access to a lot. So you could always try under that Google Scholar subheading looking for articles.
Good, good point. So if you're not like in the academic world and some of these journal articles that I showed come your way if you decide to get them. You can do what I do a lot, is you can cut to the chase or just read the abstract, read the conclusion, and you'll get the main message without having to go through statistics and all that. You had a question?
Oh, it's not, well, a comment. Actually, two comments. The one is, I think you can bypass publisher paywalls if you use a university computer. So you could go to the grad library or the undergrad library, I think, and then you could download to a thumb drive or print out the articles you're interested in. The other thing that I was going to mention is that there's a book by Sharon Salzberg. It's of the Buddhist, more philosophy than religion. There's a book, I think it's called Loving Kindness. And it goes through through giving loving kindness at the beginning of the book to yourself, and then to those very close to you whom you love, and then to friends, and then neutral persons, and finally to enemies, to avert suffering, because the goal of Buddhism is to avoid suffering. Right. So I thought I'd throw that out to you, Salzberg.
Yeah, so the book is Loving Kindness by Sharon Salzberg, a great book on how to develop compassion for yourself and others. Yeah. Thank you for that. Okay, the other question on this card is, are there other techniques to practice that support facilitating self-compassion, and what is it? I think we've kind of addressed that. Again, I would go to the website that we've talked about, and there's lots of practices, meditations, and various exercises that you can do to work on increasing self-compassion.
And we also kind of talk about really informal things, like if I'm having a difficult time, what do I need in this moment? Like what would be best for me? Or just setting a boundary today, I'm gonna let myself off the hook and not do X, Y, and Z. So kind of little ways to set boundaries and take care of yourself.
Good, okay. Okay, the next one, this is a nice question. Is there a self-change component to self-compassion? Mm. Anybody want to address that?
Yeah, that's what's so fascinating about what's coming out now with neuroscience, is that these practices actually do change our brains. You know, they change our moods, and if we practice, over time, we create new neural pathways that are positive and make us feel better. So you mentioned the book Loving Kindness. So one of the practices, there's a lot of loving kindness practice in the Mindful Self-Compassion course. Loving kindness for others, loving kindness for ourselves. And there's been research that shows if you practice loving kindness for a year, you're creating new neural pathways. We have this neuroplasticity, and that we orient the brain toward kindness. Doesn't mean that we're soft or we don't stand up for what we believe in, but it means we can do it in a kind way, which might have better results. Yeah. So yes to changing the brain.
And sort of building off what you were saying, Gilbert talks about how just the same way that maybe if someone bullies you, there's a certain neurophysiological response that happens. And when we bully ourselves, pretty much an identical neurophysiological response happens in our body. But similarly, if we offer ourselves compassion, we actually get similar benefits to if someone else were offering that, which reminds me, Rix, of what you were saying about being at college and people adjusting, and if you can kind of be your own friend and be there for yourself, that you can even get those benefits in the short term from one time of practicing it. And then with repeated practice, there's these long-term neural changes too.
Yeah. And I would also add that when you are working on being more self-compassionate, well, that's a change. It's a change in how compassionate you are. What I tell the patients that I work with on my regular groups is, no matter what anxiety disorder, depression, whatever problem you have, if you're more self-compassionate with yourself, you have kind of a solid support system there that you can be better able to change the things that you want to change. So, Will, you wanted to make an announcement or have me make one? Or?
Just in case if you guys decide to leave early, would you please, if you don't mind, filling out the review form and putting it on the table? Thank you.
And when you fill that out, be really compassionate towards this kid. Okay. How can one gain the benefits of self-compassion when the action of others, which are outside of your control, have such a significant negative impact on you and your life? That's a great question. Anybody want to take that one on? You want me to repeat it? Did you get it?
Well, I'll just say I think a lot is outside of our control. Very little is within our control. And so, you know, certainly the common humanity of it all and just giving ourselves some kindness is critical. It's really important. And to know that these are practices of taking care of yourself. Life is hard, you know? I think Scott Peck started The Road Less Traveled with, life is difficult. So, you know, how can I take care of myself? How can I give myself what I need in this moment, which strengthens, you use the word in your presentation, resilience. This is really about building resilience, emotional resilience. Yeah.
I think, echoing off of that, even if we can't change how other people are behaving, we can have compassion for that experience of not having control and compassion for the difficulties that come along with being in a relationship with that person. And I think also when self-compassion is asking what is best for me, that may mean continuing to connect to that person, but that may mean I think Neff and Germer talk about kind of the fierce protector. You were mentioning sometimes there's the assumption that it's always self-compassion is soft, but there can be a fierce protector that's willing to set a boundary, like the mama bear with their cubs. And so it also might be an opportunity at what is best for me. Is it best to stay connected to this person? Do I need to modify that? Or maybe I do keep things the same, but I keep offering myself compassion for how difficult that is.
Yeah, good. I was just going to say that I had read at one point that pain plus resistance equals suffering, and it feels to me like we spend so much energy trying to not feel bad or trying to feel differently than how we feel. And one of the things I really love about self-compassion is that it involves acceptance of pain, of our own pain. And at the same time, you're not just left hanging with it. You can then offer yourself something. I think it's a profound way of interacting with your own pain, your own suffering, regardless of source, regardless of where it's coming from, in ways that are ultimately healthier for you.
And one final response to that question, it reminds me oftentimes when I'm doing my group, it comes up, I'm talking about being less self-critical and more self-accepting and so forth. And people will say, well, that's really hard to do when I've got people in my life that are very critical and judgmental. And my response is, yeah, and that makes it really hard not to just follow along and be self-critical like they're criticizing us. On the other hand, that just shows that if we can learn to be less self-critical and more accepting, then we can buffer ourselves against what's coming from the outside and make it not be as devastating.
Okay, can I add one more thing? So there's this saying that if you take care of the moment, the moments will take care of themselves. And so if we can get the skill to take care of ourselves in a moment, my experience has been that it can actually change the interpersonal relationship. It can change the dynamics because we're being less reactive, taking more care of ourselves and responding in a different way, yeah, than we would if we didn't have these tools.
Okay. Now the next question is interesting. This is from a child age 7, or someone reporting from a child age 7. It says, I do something called fixer thoughts. Example, mom time to go to the store. Automatic thought, dang. Fixer thought, maybe it will be fun. How is this like self-compassion? Interesting question. I'm sure we can think of ways. Anybody want to respond to that?
That sounds like a really good strategy. I'm not sure I would call it self-compassion, but I would call it cognitive restructuring, which is a different kind of skill. And it's about pausing after we have an automatic negative thought and rethinking about it and looking at different perspectives and trying to get to a way of thinking about something that makes us feel less crummy, which sounds like what you're doing with your fixer thoughts.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. So thanks for continuing to bring us questions. Let's see. Repeat the definition of resilience, i.e. its multiple areas it encompasses. Anybody want to talk about that, or should I? Okay, so resilience basically means that we have the ability to bounce back when there's adversity. So I forget who the famous person or persons said that the true measure of a person's character is not how many times they've been knocked down, but how many times they get back up. And I think resilience is a personality characteristic that allows some people to, even though they're knocked down, they get back up and are able to kind of keep going with whatever is important in life. And that's what I think we would call resilience. And there's measures of resilience to see how resilient you are, but it's also something that one can practice of how to be more resilient. And I think self-compassion is like the first step in learning how to be more resilient, because then when you're knocked down, instead of kicking yourself while you're down, you pick yourself back up and then keep going.
So it's coming to me is coming back into balance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, those little things that flap around in the wind, those little balloony things, but they always come back to upright. Yeah, so these practices are a way to cultivate balance.
Yeah.
Strength.
Mm-hmm. Can I add one
little
tack? I also really love that in the definition of resilience involves falling down in the first place, because I think we always think, oh no, there's something wrong that I've fallen down, or that there's something imperfect with me, or something is going wrong in my life. And inherent in this really positive trait is actually kind of this recognition of common humanity and wisdom that this is what happens.
Yeah, I think that's great to note, that in order to be resilient, you have to have something to be resilient from, so you do have to fall down or be knocked down. It reminds me of the definition of courage. So, you know, courage really means that you have fear, but you do it anyway. You act according to your values and things that are important. So kind of goes along with that. And then the question about resilience is its multiple areas it encompasses. So I flashed up some journal articles where they've found that resilience is associated with a variety of issues. And you know, some of them were like divorce, having breast cancer, chronic pain, spina bifida, old age. Basically, I would guarantee any area that you study that's a problem, people that are more self-compassionate are going to be more resilient. Okay.
You touched on illness. I had a woman take mindful self-compassion last fall, and after that she was diagnosed with brain cancer, and she's a survivor, and she told me that these practices, these self-compassion practices and loving kindness, really got her through. And people in the hospital, like the staff, said to her, like, you're so calm, or how can you be smiling, or, you know, you seem like you have it all together. And she said she was just practicing self-compassion, and you're not doing a lot of this. So, you know, the practices don't prevent cancer, but they can certainly help us with our well-being and our attitude and our mood, And these things are very important for healing.
Good. So this one says, current culture says, quote, don't talk about negatives. They're only challenges. Comment. Does that trigger any thoughts
that's
for you?
That's mine, and I guess it's that. Like in employment, you're not allowed to say that this is a problem or this is difficult. You're to deny that and just always be positive. Right? That goes against what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Anybody want to respond to that?
Neglect of suffering, right? Or a sort of not wanting to acknowledge it in any way.
Yeah, if I were in that sort of culture, which I'm fortunate that we're not, where we are, I would hear them say that, and maybe even talk that way around them just for practical purposes. But inside, I would allow myself to think there are problems in life. There's actually times when I fail. I don't have to call it something else. It's just a learning experience. I think it's better to say, yeah, sometimes I fail, but that's not catastrophic, and I don't have to beat myself up for it. So those are some thoughts.
I actually was in a staff meeting where we were told we were not going to talk about good things and bad things anymore. We would call them alphas and deltas.
Oh, wow.
And everybody sat there looking at them. We never heard about it again. I was just dumbfounded. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about.
I think that's what Kate was saying. That, to me, is avoiding the harsh realities of life, difficult emotions, difficult situations, and just kind of trying to minimize it and call it something else. So.
And I think you're speaking to, a cultural component in our society where we do have a hard time acknowledging some of the realities of life, like loss and death or aging or, even like issues at work. So I think there's a lot of reason that a lot of us struggle with that, and it's hard to lean into and embrace that suffering because we're not talking about it. We tend to avoid it. So then if we're leaning into it, we feel like we're isolated and all alone, like we're all kind of suffering and all think everyone else is doing a lot better and not talking about it.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
Right. How do you teach some of this self-compassion to children, or can you? I have thoughts about that, so I'd like to hear anybody else that has thoughts about that.
I don't know how to work with children at all. I like working with adults, but I feel like the younger that you can learn it, the better. I think it's a fantastic idea.
I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old, so it feels to me like, and my 5-year-old is, I think, genetically hardwired to be self-critical. She probably gets it from her mother, who's a recovering self-critic. But I think that I think there are ways, and the first piece of it is just noticing when your child or grandchild is being self-critical, and helping him or her to recognize that too. Like, oh wow, let's take a look at that thought together. And then I think offering some of the tangible steps, like touching, offering yourself a hug or touching your heart. Or there's nice practices about writing yourself a letter, And so I think that some of the, what were we talking about, simple but not easy? Some of these practices are simple and can be done, I think, very easily with kids, even as young as, 5 or so.
I actually do have a thought about it after all. I can't remember if it was Brené Brown or Kristen Neff, but I think part of it is if, kids pick up on things, right? So if we're treating ourselves in a compassionate way, there's a lot of modeling involved, and we're also like more likely to be compassionate to them to help them learn how to treat themselves. But I'm going to say it's Brené Brown, but she, I think, had her kids in the car and was driving, and she forgot to get gas, and, she had this moment of thinking, like, oh, I'm so frustrated, like, why didn't you think of this? And, now we're going to be late for this and that. And then she was like, that's not really kind of the way that I want to teach my children to respond to this hard situation. So she was saying, I'm stressed out, and it's understandable that mom forgot to get the gas today because she was busy and she had a lot going on, so we're going to do it now, and, we'll be a little late, but that's okay. So I think even kind of modeling when you have your own struggles, how to do that in a compassionate way can really scaffold for them.
I think that's really important. I love this question because I often share how I have taught my kids these types of concepts. And so the first example is I have a daughter who just turned 28. And when she was maybe 3 or 4, I've been taking care of her all day. It was getting too late. She should have been in bed. It was probably 10:30. Her mom was out of town. And she was putting toothpaste on her toothbrush, and she squirted it, and too much came out. And so I immediately said, "Oh, Abby." And she looked up at me and said, "Dad, remember, everybody makes mistakes." and that was just a mistake I made. And I said, "You're right." And I made a mistake by getting so irritated. I taught her this stuff from day one. Okay. And then more recently, I have a 10-year-old little adopted son. And I've taught him what I call the FHB concept, stands for fallible human being. I have FHB on my whiteboard in my office. And the idea, of course, is that we're all fallible, imperfect human beings, okay? And so little Eddie has heard me talk about that. And then one day I was getting ready to pull out of the driveway, and I was telling him, "Oh, I left my raincoat at his grandmother's." And I said, "Shame on me." I didn't really mean shame on me like I feel shame. And he said, "Remember, Papa, FHB." You know, gave it right back to me. And you can teach these concepts to kids in fun sort of ways like that. All right, let's see. We've got one more here, which is great in terms of timing. In a university setting, we honor achievement and we push ourselves hard, underline. This does have the benefit of promoting excellence, okay? Is there a risk that too much self-compassion would make us soft and achieve less? I love that question. Go for it. I definitely want to talk about it, but I want to hear you guys first. Anybody want to talk about that?
It's not true. No, I mean, it sort of speaks, I think, to the research that Rick's pointed out, which is essentially that it is something that I think, and coming from a medical background, I completely understand that philosophy of it pushes me, it fuels me, it drives me, and without it, I wouldn't be as successful. I wouldn't be where I am today. But actually, that's not at all what the research would show. The research would show that paradoxically, if we offer ourselves compassion and we take that approach as opposed to a self-critical approach, we're more motivated, we're more likely to be successful and to achieve highly. And so to me, it's like, yeah, being self-critical is a way in which you can get somewhere. It also creates a lot of suffering and misery along the way. Here's an alternative that also helps you get somewhere and doesn't come with as much misery and suffering along the way. So I see it as a nice alternative without as much pain.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like the carrot and the stick, you know?
Yeah,
sure,
exactly.
Stick is a motivator, but the carrot is a compassionate, self-compassionate motivator, and the research shows more effective. So and instead of beating myself up about, oh, I didn't, exercise today, how can I be kind to myself around that and motivate myself by really wanting to take care of myself? Mm-hmm. So it's shown to be a better motivator. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such an important topic.
This reminds me, too, of what I often talk with my patients about in terms of perfectionism, which is similar to being overly self-critical. And what the research finds with perfectionism is that there's different subtypes of perfectionism, and the different measures of perfectionism will show what type of perfectionism you score highest in. One type of perfectionism is called high standards. And that's when we have high standards, we shoot for excellence. And that's been shown to be adaptive. It's not associated with anxiety and depression. The kind of perfectionism that's problematic is called self-critical perfectionism. And that's when we beat ourselves up when we don't meet our high standards. So you can keep your high standards, but not beat yourself up when you don't reach them. The other point I make is, when people think, well, there's some advantages to self-criticism, I'd say maybe there's advantages to critiquing your performance or critiquing how you went about preparing for something. But anytime it's self-criticism, we're putting the whole self down, mm-hmm. I would argue that's never helpful.
And I think with self-criticism as a motivator, that's running away from pain, right? That's like, I don't feel good enough, I'm running away from shame or inadequacy. Whereas I think the motivation that comes from self-compassion is I want what's best for myself. So that might mean I don't feel like staying late at work today, but actually in this particular scenario, that would be helpful. So I think there are ways that it's motivating you towards a positive goal, and that if you want a successful career or you want emotional well-being, self-compassion in its true form would help you make sometimes tough decisions to do that. So it's not always easy.
I'm reminded of the analogy of the heart. You know, the heart fills itself with blood first, and then it pumps blood throughout the body. And if we take care of ourselves first with self-compassion, then we actually have more to offer. Seems inefficient to give all we have, and you know, also leads to burnout.
Good.
So, yeah, just taking care of ourselves first, and then we can come from a place of wholeness and having more to offer in the workplace.
Right. I think it's probably about time to wind up. So we appreciate everybody coming tonight and really encourage you to explore this whole approach of self-compassion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.